make big time where you are. Don't think your program is not being a big time program. Make it in a big time. This little small town that we're in, baseball is a big deal. It's a big deal around here. And we've just had players that have embraced it. Some good players that have come along and kind of embraced the system. We've turned into a big time deal here.
Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. I am Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for being here. This episode is brought to you by Baseball Cloud. Baseball Cloud's revolutionary software platform brings to life the numbers captured by TrackMan and FlightScope. This provides colleges, players, and facility owners around the world a turnkey product, allowing them to analyze their data using key metrics and custom visualizations on one intuitive user interface. Go to baseballcloud.com to find out how you can have your own data analytics department for your program. Data has a story to tell, and Baseball Cloud gives it a voice. Today's episode features Lance Spigner, head coach at Horatio High School in Horatio, Arkansas. Coach Spigner has been the head coach at Horatio for the past 28 years and led the Lions to 17 conference championships, 10 regional championships, and 5 state championships. Spigner has also been awarded the American Baseball Coaches Association and Diamond Sports Region Coach of the Year 3 times. This will actually be his last season at Horatio, recently announcing that he was taking the head coaching job at the University of Arkansas Rich Mountain. I've also had the pleasure of hearing Lance speak a few times, and he absolutely gets the most out of his small town kids. On the show, Coach Spigner walks us through what his 28 years of coaching experience has shown him, and he shares with us some different ways that he goes about training his players for success, what types of different competitive efforts and events keep his players embracing a winning attitude, and how they have fun on the field. Here is Lance Spigner. Coach Spigner, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate you having me.
So I was thinking back, and actually a couple of years ago, I think my first or second year of coaching, I got the opportunity to listen to you speak at the Oklahoma Coaches Convention, and I remember it, and I thought you did an absolutely outstanding job. Especially at the small school that you're at, and you do a great job of maximizing the talent in which you have. But, you know, for our listeners, tell us a little bit about your coaching background and why you decided to get into it.
Okay. That really doesn't take me very long. I've been at the same school here at Horatio High School, Horatio, Arkansas. I've been at the same school for, it's my 28th year. It's the only place I've ever coached professionally. I told some guys not long ago that when I got through with my playing days, that I was not good enough to get any attention from Major League Baseball, but I did get some attention from slow pitch softball teams. So one of the guys that I was playing with was a shortstop on our team, and I was in went to a year of graduate school after I finished at UCA, played baseball at UCA, and he said they had a coaching job open at Horatio, which is about 30 minutes from where I grew up in Ashdown, Arkansas. So I started there in 91-92, and I've been there ever since. You know, a lot of people may think that I was, you know, I come from a coaching family. My dad coached for over 25 years, football and baseball coach. So a lot of people thought maybe that I might be destined for that, but it really, you know, my student teaching, I didn't enjoy that a whole lot. The coaching part was great. Mm-hmm. Teaching, not so much. So the first job I actually interviewed for was to be a game warden.
Okay.
An Arkansas game warden. And I made the first cut and got down to about 20 guys for 6 jobs. And I did not get that. That was in January. And then I guess in August of the next year, I started Horatio. And I guess it's, you know, they say about unanswered prayers. I guess it's a good thing. It worked out pretty well. I didn't get the game warden job. So, like I said, I've been here ever since.
And so this will be your last season there?
Yeah, I let my team know a couple of weeks ago. If you're talking to some guys for back and forth for over a year, then I'm going to retire at the end of this year, draw my Arkansas teacher retirement, and then I'm going to help them start a baseball program at the University of Arkansas at Rich Mountain, which is going to be a Division II JUCO, about an hour and 10 minutes north of us. They're going to field their first baseball team in the 2020 through 2021 school year. And I have decided I'm going to take that job and start with them this coming year.
Awesome. And again, congratulations. There's no doubt that you will do a great job there. And so let's go ahead and dig into some player development. Talk to us about what your fall looks like.
you know, one of the, I think one of the presentations I did when I went to Oklahoma was winning with underdogs. It was kind of the, right. you know, what we try to do, player development and getting the most out of everybody, most mm-hmm. out of everybody's athletic abilities. But in the fall, I, you know, small school, we have a class size, 65, 70 kids. So we have to share athletes. For the longest time, I was an assistant coach in football too. Last few years, I've kind of gotten out of that. But I'm lucky if I have, you know, a third of my roster with me in the fall. Now, there are some years, like a couple of years ago, I had all three starting pitchers in that group. They were baseball players only. But I'm, like I said, I'm lucky if I have about a third of those. So what we'll try to do in the fall is we're going to lift 3 days a week.
Okay.
And we're going to come out to the baseball field, to our indoor, and we're going to do either our throwing program, if it's that time of the year. I like the Jaeger year-round throwing program. Mm-hmm. Or we're going to do probably some bat speed work. So we're still, you know, everything is development pretty much in the fall for us. Our weights, we're going to try to do an upper body push, an upper body pull, some type of hinge exercise, like maybe a Romanian deadlift, and then a squat, and then some type of anti-rotation or core exercise.
Okay.
And then when we come, like I said, we come out to the field. If it's time to start, it's not a dead period or a rest period for us, is we're going to do the throwing program and build up. That's going to go usually about 6 weeks for us in the fall. And then we're going to go add about three more weeks of that when we start doing pull downs, kind of letting it rip a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then sometime around Thanksgiving, we'll break off and have a rest through the Thanksgiving holidays. And then we come back after that is when we start throwing, you know, we get into our bullpens. And we'll usually throw 6 or 7 weeks of build up bullpens before we take about a week season starts.
Perfect.
That's one thing we do too is at the end of the fall, sometime in October, I guess kind of our version of everybody's Omaha Olympics, we have the Dirt Bag Olympics, and it's a week of competition where we'll split up into two teams. Our players seem to really enjoy that, and we're going to have, you know, about 3 days of competition. Usually I split up into two teams, so it's one team against another, or if I have enough to split into three teams. But they're going to compete daily competitions, usually three competitions a day, things like a sled push, prowler sled push, or a pool, obstacle course at the end, that kind of thing. And then we'll award a dirt bag Olympic champion at the end of it, and that group, you know, gets a pizza or something like that. So
cool.
That's kind of how we wrap up the fall.
Oh, I love it. And you had me curious at the bat speed training. So what are you guys doing for that?
Well, I'll tell you, we've got a set of the drive line, the axe bats, with the drive line program, but we also make, you know, I make a set. I've got about three sets that I've actually made. I'm like, okay. Like a mad scientist, I guess, I borrow the chemistry teacher's scale. Mm-hmm. And we'll actually, there are different ways we do that. We do it, you know, we try to go about 20% heavier on those bats, and we'll load them on the end, and we'll load them on the handle with coins, mm-hmm. usually wrapped up in athletic tape or gorilla tape, duct tape. And I'm in there, you know, I borrow scales and translating from grams to ounces, trying to get it all set up. And we'll actually have, you know, we have the axe bat set, but we'll have three more that we've made. And yeah. We've done those. We make them with washers and self-tapping screws in the end. We'll weight them like that. We'll weight them with coins. That way we'll have, we can actually split up into groups. Instead of everybody having to wait on one set of weighted bats, we, you know, we can kind of alternate those out and get about three or four stations of weighted bat work done. We also, you know, I really enjoyed Dan Heefner, Dallas Baptist, his ABCA presentations. Mm-hmm. And we'll do a lot of the stuff that he does that he's talked about in his ABCA presentations. And we discovered this past year that Pocket Radar has a smart coach that has Bluetooth now. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a cheap man's radar gun and display where you could actually set up the app on the iPad. And players can see their exit velo anytime you want. You can put up the Pocket Radar back behind them on a little tripod and then get the Pocket Radar, the iPad, and they can actually see their own exit velo. So we'll do a lot of competitions, you know, where one of our favorite things to do is when we're inside is to have like a World Series bat, an exit velo World Series, where if you and I were paired together, is we're going to take three swings. It may be off the tee, it may be front toss, maybe side toss, anything. But you're going to get three swings, and we're going to take your highest exit velo, and then I'm going to get three swings. And if yours is higher than mine, you win game one of the World Series. So the best, you know, the first one to win four out of seven wins that, and the other has maybe like 10 push-ups.
I gotcha.
Which, you know, those kind of, and we really enjoy the smart coach and the app on the iPad.
Perfect. Well, while we're on the subject of competitions, what are some different ones that you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, how much time do you have? I mean, we try to turn it into some competition because, you know, competition is fun, and that's what you want out of your players. You want them to enjoy what they're doing out here, but also you want to make competitors out of them. Mm-hmm. So, literally everything we do, we're going to try, if we can, I'm going to try to turn into some type of competition as opposed to just straight drill work. You know, there's enough of that already. As an example, I mean, when we break off with the infielders, the very first thing we do in our catch play routine is we're going to do ball handling. And what that means is every player has their glove on, they have a ball in their hand, and they're going to go through basically basketball-type ball handling drills. They're going to go to 10, and the first one to get to 10 raises it up, wins that competition. So we'll go around the waist. If you can imagine a guy throwing a basketball around his waist repeatedly, we're doing that with a baseball and making exchanges with the baseball and our glove. And we just go to 10 around the waist, and we'll go around the knees, then we'll do a figure eight between our legs, and then we do what we call a scissors, which is a figure eight. We're actually scissoring your leg and throwing it between your legs. So each of those is a little, I mean, that's how we start the day of the infield. It's a little competition. We're trying to go to 10. First one to 10 raises the ball up in their glove, and, you know, we say their name, and everybody else groans, and they cheer. So we kind of start like that. And then, not every day, but a majority of the time, one of the things we'll do to start practice once we all come together is what we call push out, drag out. And that's a competition between our corner infielders, pitchers, and catchers against our, what we call our deer, the guys who have some speed and are a threat to drag and push bunt. So push out, drag out is literally we're going to set up the pitch machine or coach is going to throw, and those guys are going to push or drag bunt and then try to reach base safely against those other guys. And then we can get a lot of good work, you know, offensively with our bunt for a hit system and defensively trying to defense it just in about 5 minutes. So that's a little competition. Mm-hmm. And I actually got that off of a championship production VP, I think Chris Hanks.
Okay.
The coach at Colorado Mesa University did that. We kind of stole that idea from him. Another thing we do competition-wise that I really like is we call it green light game.
Okay.
And once again, we're working on our base running with the people that we call deer. We have deer and we have ox. And the deer are, you know, they're on first base and they've got the green light to run. And the game basically works like this. You've got your catchers are in full gear at the plate. You've got pitchers on the mound and aren't deer and running. Middle infielders covering and a first baseman covering first base. The offense will score if they steal second base. So they get 1 point if they steal second base. If the throw gets by the middle infielder and reaches the center field or the outfield grass, gets in the center field, they get an additional bonus point for that. So the offense gets a point for stealing the base. They can get another point if the ball goes into the outfield. And then the defense gets 3 points if they pick the runner off first base. And if it's a caught stealing, they get 2 points. And that's another one of those deals that in 5 or 10 minutes, now instead of just, you know, measuring pop time with your catchers or talking about getting a good jump on, you know, did you get a good jump? You had a green light. Did you get a good jump? Now you're actually working on it. And it's a competition that, you know, gets you a lot of reps, live reps, in 5 or 10 minutes. So that's another, you know, little competition we do a lot of times before we ever even start practice that we really like. A couple other things that spring to mind. One of them is called the two-strike challenge.
Okay.
You know, they say if you're going to come, from what I've read, you're going to have two strikes. Over 40% of the time you're at bats, you're going to have at least two strikes. So why not, you know, try to get your kids confident with two strikes? And we'll do a deal that we call the two-strike challenge. And the way that works is I'm going to pair hitters up into a group, and those hitters are going to compete against each other in their group. So they're going to step into the plate, and they're going to have an 0-2 count. Any batted ball that they hit is played live by the defense. And each group is going to get to hit the same number of times. So if, say, we're going to hit for 6 minutes, but we're not going to cut it off before everybody gets an equal amount of chance, because once again, we're trying to score, compete, and we're trying to win. So the scoring in this game, and this is usually coach thrown, but if you strike out swinging, it's minus 1 point off your score. If you strike out looking, it's 2 points off your score. So it's a minus two. if you put a ball in play, but you're retired by the defense, it's just a, it's an even, it's a zero. And then if you, anytime you reach base safely, you get 3 points. So we'll do the two strike challenge, put them in groups of pretty similar abilities. And then, you know, award a winner in each one of those groups when we get through an equal number of rounds.
Oh, I love that.
And, yeah. And then the last thing, I guess, they seem to really enjoy this is after, whenever we get through with BP, not every day, but enough to keep it fresh and kind of special, is we'll try to clear the field and beat our timed record from clearing the field after BP. Screens off, balls off, pitching mound off, everything off. And what I'll do is, it sounds kind of goofy, but I'll go over to the press box and turn on the PA system with the iPod and play the William Tell Overture. So they'll actually, when the music starts, they'll start clearing the field and breaking the cage down, the turtle around home plate and pushing it off. Mm-hmm. And then when they get back, stopwatch starts, when the music starts, and when they get back in the first base dugout, everybody's back in the dugout sitting down, it stops. And then we try to, you know, we'll try to get that time down to 47 seconds, 45 seconds.
Wow.
We're getting, you know, faster every time we do it. And they, you know, they'll work out a system and they'll plan out ahead of time and how they're going to do it. It's, but that's a, you know, a little competition with ourselves. It's just a kind of a good way to ends up wrapping up the day for us at the end of BP a lot of times.
Man, I love that idea. And, you know, things that are competitive and get them to communicate, I'm all in on. Another thing that I picked up from you is the stickers for hit by pitches. So can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we do. I mentioned earlier, we kind of, you know, with apologies to Long Beach State, I guess we've embraced the identity of being dirt bags. Kind of fits just the country kids, rural area kids, and it's just a tough mindset. It kind of embraces the type of kid we have. And I think it's one thing that helps us, you know, compete against teams who sometimes may be more athletic, and we're going to be dirt bags. And one of the things that is involved with that for us is, you know, we're going to say that we try to think we're tougher than you are. Our team's going to be tougher than yours. You're not going to move our feet when we're in the batter's box. That's not always true, but that year in and year out is kind of our identity, and it's passed on from one group of players to another. So if you're going to be man enough to stand in there and wear a pitch, then, you know, we're going to reward you for it. And what we do is we call it Man of Steel points or Man of Steel stickers. And we've got a sticker, just a helmet decal, you know, about the size of a quarter, a helmet decal like they have in football. And it's got the Superman S on the sticker. And you sometimes, Jonathan, I think it's almost like you're handing them a little piece of gold when they get those things. They get so excited, like little kids again. So after the game, we're totaling up our numbers and kind of having our game review, as we'll pass out our awards. And one of the things, we pass steel stickers. So, and they'll take those usually and put them, they like to put them on the underside of the bill of their cap. We'll have guys that, you know, I mean, we've had guys that have gotten hit 18 to 22 times in a season, here before, and they run out of room on their hat, and you'll see them on the locker facing sometimes. But it's something they've kind of embraced. And I mean, it's, you know, it's a free 90. We're going to give us a free 90. We're going to try to take it.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And again, you're trying to get the best out of the players which you've got. And I love that. And so talk to us. Another thing that you have to do in a small town is you have to fundraise probably a decent amount of money. So what are some different ways that you've figured out some good fundraisers? And I know that we as high school coaches are always looking for good ones to do. And so can you walk us through a couple of ones that you found effective?
Sure. We raise a lot of money. We have, you know, we have an 80 by 90 indoor here that was, for the most part, paid with outside donations. We've had it since about 98. Our community has been spectacular, and our administration too, as far as supporting our program. But the people around here just love to give to the baseball program. And when I say we're a small, you know, I'm not exaggerating. We're a small school in a small town. It was a big deal for us when the 2010 census came out, because we actually got four numerals on our population sign for the very first time. So, I mean, wow. But we raised a lot of money. So guys that have a larger population base or fan base, I mean, I know they can. And I guess some of the best things we do is we have a Friends of Horatio Baseball signs. And a lot of people do the banners in the outfield. This is, to me, it's a little bit better, because these are aluminum signs. And they're about 24 by 36 inches. And we put them here on the wall of our indoor right by the concession stand that faces the field. So they're really visible. Well, they're, like I said, they're a luminous sign, so they stay out year round. I don't have to worry about them flapping in the wind or somebody cutting them with a knife on the outfield fence. And they, you know, I'll sell them one time. And then literally after that, all I have to do is send a letter out and get the check. It's like Christmas. And we have 25 of those.
Okay.
They're just raising money for us year after year. And people, you know, I tell people all the time, it's just a matter of getting out there and asking people. That I, very few people ever tell me no. I could fill up, I think I maybe could sell 50 of those if I had room to put them up. And that's an easy one. Once you get the sign, we charge double the first year to pay for the sign and make the profit. And then after that, it's half the cost of what they paid initially every year to keep it up.
Okay.
And like I said, it's just a matter of sending the letters out sometime in the fall and then watching as the checks roll in. So that's really good. Yeah. The online fundraisers, we found out, I don't know about it, at our place, in our state, auditors have gone kind of crazy on taking, you know, when you take money in and how you document it and how you receive it. And we found the easiest thing to do with a lot of times with our fundraising is to go with some of the online fundraisers.
Okay.
The guys that will, you know, they take 5 or 10% of your profit, but to me, it's worth it not to handle all that money or have to deal with the auditors. And they actually will, we have one that we use where you come in and sit down in a computer lab and the players will enter 15 email addresses, the minimum each. And then this company sends out the emails and a weekly reminder if somebody does not donate, and then sends out the thank you email when they do donate. And it's kind of personalized where if the players, it's send it to grandpa, it says grandpa on it, players already entered that, and you get one check. You only have to receive the one check you get from the company who's handling all this for you when it comes in. So I think, to me, the online fundraisers are really good. If you can find somebody that will do it, and we have for, you know, a small percentage of your profit.
Okay.
One thing we do, we haven't done this, but we need to do it again soon. It's really fun. We call it Dine on the Diamond. And Dine on the Diamond is exactly what it is. One night, it's basically like a political fundraising dinner.
Okay.
Except you're doing it for your baseball team, is we'll set up cafeteria tables on the infield diamond under the lights on a warm night and then have somebody donate and cook a meal for us. And the players serve as waiters and we'll take donations or sell plates, you know, like just like a political fundraising dinner would work. We'll sell plates or take donations or both at the fundraiser. Well, the players, you know, they'll dress up in white shirts and drape the towel over their arm and they will actually wait on each table. Which is, we've had a lot of, every time we do that, we have a lot of compliments on that. And then we have a group here, a booster organization that runs a golf tournament for us, which is a lot of fun. And it makes as much money as anything with hole signs, you know, sell sponsors on every hole for a couple hundred dollars. And then the entry fees with the golfers getting the tournament. So those are all pretty easy, you know, and they make big money. That's what I tell people all the time. I like fundraisers that, first of all, aren't going to kill me trying to get it done. But instead of doing all that work at a car wash or, you know, at a chicken spaghetti dinner or something like that, I want stuff that's going to make really big money. And these, for the most part, generate thousands of dollars for us each.
Well, that's fantastic. And you've talked a lot about a lot of different aspects of your program, and I'm always curious, you know, you mentioned that one of the standards that you have in your program is dirt bags. And so what are some different rules and standards that you guys try and implement or enforce, you know, just on a daily basis?
Well, you know, one thing my dad said, kind of old school, when I started, were the more written rules you have, the more rope sometimes you leave people to hang yourself. So we don't necessarily have a large amount of, we don't have a rule sheet or written rules for the most part. Now there are some, but the main thing as far as standards and rules is we try not to do anything that's going to embarrass the baseball program, to embarrass yourself or embarrass your family. And then anything that does, we've got a problem with. We're going to have to do something about it probably. And then just have enough respect to be early. You know, we say on time is too late, to be early and just have enough respect for your teammates to be on time and show up when you're supposed to show up. One thing we have done too, that's another thing, when I describe it, it even sounds kind of goofy to me, but it works, man. I mean, it works. It just works. We have a deal we call the cube, rolling the cube. And it's all that little stuff. You know, maybe somebody's is late getting out to practice, even if it's a minute late, or somebody had lunch detention. All the little stuff that you just need to kind of keep knocked down so it doesn't turn into big stuff. Because we have a little, it's basically a die, singular dice. It's a 4x4 post that we've cut into a cube.
Okay.
And then it's got, you know, different punishments on four of those sides. It's going to have different punishments. Like it's going to say maybe 305-foot lunge or 25 burpees or something like that. And then one side has a frowny face, which is coach's choice, and the other sides have a smiley face, which is free pass.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, all that little stuff is, instead of me, you know, it's not really me picking on you, is you've messed up, you're late for practice, you know, you have to roll the cube before we start. And they'll roll that cube, and it may be one of the punishments or not. And then also, if, you know, if we, on some of the bigger stuff, we have another number up maybe in the top right corner of that dice where now you've gotten maybe in school suspension or something for 3 days, and now you got three big cube rolls. So the cube roll, you know, I mean, it really works. They hate it. It doesn't take very long. Mm-hmm. A coach doesn't have to stand out there and watch them do a 20-minute run. But it has the same effect because they hate to roll the cube, and it'll keep a lot of that, like I said, keep a lot of the small stuff knocked down for you.
Perfect. I really like that. And it's something that I'm sure it keeps it fresh too. And anything that you can do that is,
it does,
that is a consequence, yeah, that doesn't take forever, I really like. And so,
it kind of takes the onus off of you a little bit of being the bad guy.
Sure.
Because, you know, I didn't just choose this. That's what you wrote. I think it does two things. It kind of helps, like I said, it helps keep the small stuff knocked down, and nobody wants to do that. And it, you know, you're not as much of a bad guy with your players for having to bring the hammer down on them.
Let me take a few seconds to tell you guys about On Base U. On Base University is an organization that studies how the human body moves in baseball and softball. They offer certification seminars that teach coaches, trainers, and medical professionals how to assess an athlete's physical ability to perform movement patterns that are specific to hitting and pitching. For example, they just put up a blog on their website, onbaseu.com, that discussed why hip internal rotation is important in hitting and how they evaluate it with their OnBaseU screen. If you want to learn more about OnBaseU, I did a podcast with OnBaseU founder, Dr. Greg Rose, episode 78, who talked about this and modeled the screen after golf assessments that he created for TPI. They are hosting pitching and hitting seminars in Newark, Houston, and Chicago over the next few months, and I will be attending the one in Houston, and I hope to see you there. Sure. And so, while we're recording this podcast, it's right in the middle of our seasons. And so take us through what you guys are doing as far as practice plans go, because I love to hear the different perspectives and, you know, what especially you're doing at a smaller school. And how many players do you have in your program? And do you guys all practice together?
We do. This year we have 20. That is not very many for us. We've had, at our place, we'll have up to 32.
Okay.
Some years we have up to 32 or so. So usually it's going to be in the mid-20s, 24, 25 guys. So we all practice together.
Mm-hmm.
When we play, we have 25 uniforms. So we'll almost always dress everybody out and just have when we have a B game or a JV game, it's going to be some of the same guys that have dressed out for us in the varsity.
Okay.
The way we basically have two different types of practice. You're talking about what do we do in the preseason, and like I said, we're in the middle of the season now, so it's changed a little bit. But in the preseason, we are going to, you know, and I spoke about this in the Barnstormers video a little bit. I had a conversation with a friend of mine, a guy that I played college ball with, who's a really, really good coach in Arkansas, Kirk Bach, and we were talking about when do you throw bullpens?
Mm-hmm.
And long story short, he basically said, so you're telling me that you think, you know, what percentage of importance do you place on pitch? And I'm like, man, it's just a whole lot. I know some people say 90 or whatever. I just know it's really important. He said, well, why are you throwing it at the end of practice and if it's that important? So he started explaining to me, and we kind of adopted that, is we throw all of our bullpens at the start of practice.
Okay.
And we've done that now for, I guess, 3 or 4 years, and it's worked out really well for us. So our practice will start with everybody will come together 25 or 30 minutes. The pitchers will start doing their J-band work while the other guys are doing the last bit of field prep, bases in, tarps off, pitch machines out if I need them, that kind of thing. And then we'll all come together for a team dynamic warm-up. And then we'll alternate. We have a linear day where we're working more linear stuff, and we'll alternate that with a lateral day with some lateral bounding, and it's more lateral work. And then we'll break off into our catch play routine. So once again, we're a small school. We don't have POs, no pitchers only for the most part. So I'm going to have all the infielders with me, for instance, are doing their catch play routine. And I'm lucky enough to have two assistant coaches, which for the first 25 years I coached, I only had one assistant. But I have two assistants now. So one guy's with the catchers, another guy's with the outfielders. And then when we finish catch play, that's when our bullpen start. Okay. So we split our players into two different groups, pitchers. We split our pitchers in two different groups, Group A and Group B, and they'll throw 2 days a week in pens usually. So if it's Group A's day, they're going to throw on Monday and Thursday. They would start their bullpens with the catchers there. Group B, the pitchers who are throwing maybe on Tuesday and Friday, are going to do the alternate activity that the pitching coach has chosen for them. They may be spinning pitches that day. They may be doing picks, PFPs. They may come with me and my group. The other group, the ones who aren't pitchers or catchers during their pens, there are many different things that we can do. We can do defensive work. We can go inside and do a hit and rotation, do some bat speed work. We can do some data collection, you know, with exit velos and launch angles attack angles, stuff like that. We can be stand-in hitters. So that's going to take another 30 minutes or so. And then bullpens are done, and it's time we would – you know, then going to practice, full team practice. That's usually for us now, and this is all going to take probably about 2.5 hours usually in the preseason. But we're going to do usually some kind of what I call a bridge activity, and that's going to be something like push out, drag out that we talked about earlier, mm-hmm. live base running versus pitchers and catchers. That's another thing that I talked about on that Barnstormers video. And also, you know, we're really big on our pickoff system. So we'll do like a tri-picks and then have our fast bunt threats up there doing a deal we call a deer point game, which is another bunting game that we do. Anybody gets a hold of me after this over with, I can send you all this stuff that I'm just kind of breezing through. But we'll do that's about a 10-minute activity that then takes us to what we call group defense. A lot of guys call it indie defense, or we call it group, mm-hmm. where – you know, the infielders are going to be with me, and the catchers are with their guy, and the outfielders are with their guy. That will usually transition into most days into team defense, where we're working on some kind of team defensive aspect. And then I like to finish up with BP at the end of practice. And that's going to be 50, you know, usually 50 minutes to an hour for the most part, something like that.
Okay.
And that's, you know, kind of how practice runs for us. I like to go, I heard somebody say a long time ago that hitting is fun and defense is work. Get the work out of the way first while they're fresh, and then let them swing and have fun at the end.
Sure. I like that a lot. And you mentioned again in your Barnstormers presentation about what your BP setup looks like. And I think you said you had dirtbag guys, bombers, slugging percentage, OPS guys. Can you kind of walk us through what your BP setup looks like and how you group those guys together?
Yeah. First of all, I guess, you know, I made a switch few years ago. I'm always trying to learn and try to stay on the cutting edge. And I start reading the research from the driveline guys and the other that maybe we're not, you know, maximizing our BP. So we have made a concerted effort the last few years to at least half the time take a BP that is what they classified as high growth, low performance. We were doing, you know, from the research I read and just what makes learning sticky, we were doing way too much high performance with low pressure, just BP fastballs. And so, like I said, we made an effort to kind of get into high growth, low performance type stuff, like maybe high velo, high pitch variability, changing the implements they use with weighted bats, that kind of thing. And then, the Matt Deggs with the pack mentality, his stuff came out a few years ago, and I was watching that, mm-hmm. and he started talking about the way they recruit players and the way that they divide ball players up. Ball players, you know, he had runners and and just a bunch of different classifications. And why those guys don't need to be trained, all need to be trained the same way. So I got to thinking about that. And you know, even on the high school level, I got to thinking, why are we training all these guys the exact same way?
Sure.
So we started kind of trying to, instead of having one BP, we started trying to tailor our BP to fit our personnel. Now, most of the guys that we get here are at our small school are going to be what we call dirt bags. And they're going to be dirt bags, and dirt bags for us are on base percentage, quality at bat kind of guys. The guys that you want to pass the baton to the other guy, till eventually you get somebody up there with enough dirt bags on base, one of your damage guys. And we call those guys slugging percentage RBI guys that can actually, you know, do the damage these guys have kind of set up for them. Not that we won't take damage from on base quality at bat percentage guys. So we came up with one of the BPs we use a lot. We call it the production point game. And once again, it's another competition. It's a game. And every time that they execute the skill call for correctly, they get a point. And the goal is to have the highest number of points. But you're not competing. If you're an on-base quality at bat percentage guys, you're one of our dirt bag guys, you're not competing against the slugging percentage guys. You're only trying to win your group. And I won't go through all these, but like one of the rounds for the on-base quality at bat percentage guys is going to be, and these rounds have five skills or five, they'll make five attempts in each round to do this. So we're going to start off in one of these rounds with the on-base quality at bat percentage guys with a bunt for a hit, be it push or drag, then again, it's sack bunt. Then they're going to try to find the barrel. And if we judge it to be a barrel, they get a point for that. They're going to bunt for hit again, and they're going to go barrel to end that round. So every one of those skills that player performed correctly, he gets a check mark or a point, and we're going to total those at the end. Conversely, on the other side of that, with the slugging percentage RBI guys, his round may go like this: barrel, wall, score the runner from third base with less than two out. So a wall is literally exactly what it says. They've got to hit a ball that's not cut off by an outfielder that is hit hard enough to reach or clear the outfield wall.
Cool.
And they would get a point for that. So there you go. They were trying to do some damage. Barrel wall, and then the kind of a contact situation with score the runner from third. So each, like I said, those groups are competing against each other, and we're going to give, you know, and here, honestly, sometimes I have trouble on our roster finding five guys to make up a group of slugging percentage RBI guys. I may have a year where we're really, really heavy in on-base quality of bat percentage guys, and we just don't have many of those bashers. But it usually works out pretty good for us, and we really like it. Players like it, and the winner of that group will get a Powerade or something cool like that. One that gets to reach into the candy bag and pull out a candy bar after we get through because he won that day.
Oh, I like that, and that's something that, again, you're infusing competition into individual player development, and I love that. And so, again, at the time of this recording, we're getting ready for the postseason. So, being a coach for 20 plus years, what does that process look like for you guys, and just getting ready to peak at the right time?
Well, you know, one thing I think that's helped us as far as the postseason is concerned, we seem to always be, not always, but a lot of the time we seem to be peaking during postseason play, playing our best baseball. We've kind of gotten hot and we're rolling. And I think a lot of that is attributed to your approach as a coach and kind of reading your team. You know, my dad told me when I first started that the most important thing you can do as a coach is to make it fun for your players, especially high school age players. So all these competitions and we just try to do neat stuff that players are going to enjoy. And it's not all enjoyable. It's not all going to be birthday cake and party hats, but something can be rewarding, you know, and still be fun. So we try to make everything we do, try to make it as fresh, change up what we're doing, just keep everybody fresh and enjoying things. That's my goal. And that helps us, I think, as opposed to coming out, we're going to do these same six, you know, stations on our hitting rotation. We're going to do them from January through May. I think variety and kind of reading your team and see when they need to have mix in some things with a little bit more fun to keep interest high. That to me is a big key as far as postseason play is concerned, is to have a team that's still ready to play and not, you know, worn out mentally, physically, even if you have to give them a Wednesday off on, you know, sometime, and just kind of read them and then get after it. And the second thing, I guess, is that I think is really big as far as postseason success is just having a consistent approach throughout the year, that you don't, you know, no matter if you're playing a non-conference game in the middle of the week, is I'm going to have a routine. This is how I'm going to step into the plate. This is how I'm going to do this. This is the time I'm going to walk out on the field and prepare. I mean, just being consistent to where, you know, it's those postseason at bats. Yeah, they're going to have some pressure, but trying to make it as you know, close to your routine as you've been following throughout the whole year, just having a consistent approach like that. So those two things, I think, besides just the fact that you know, you gather your numbers and you gather your data and you just see it, you know, we have several checkpoints through the year and just see, here's where we are. This is what we're not very good at. Mm-hmm. And just always trying to monitor and adjust and eliminate those, take those weaknesses and make them where they're not as much of a weakness by the time it, you know, you're playing for your life at the end of the year.
No doubt, no doubt. And, you know, for those listening, best of luck in the postseason as we are about to embark on that. And, you know, Coach, I want to get your advice on your first year as a head coach. So you're thinking back, you know, 20 plus years ago, and you just had taken the job at Horatio, and you could go back and give yourself some advice. You know, what would that advice be?
You know, I got some really good advice, and I still remember it. I don't know how I stumbled on this. It was either in the first 2 years, at least, that I started coaching. I got a flyer, a guy named Dick Birmingham, who is a Hall of Famer that I didn't really know who Dick Birmingham was at that time, in Missouri, Springfield, Missouri, was having a clinic. And I just knew that there was a Bass Pro Shops in Springfield, and I had a chance to go watch, I guess it was Missouri State, play basketball during that clinic. So mm-hmm. I decided over Christmas break that I'm going to go to drive to Springfield. This is not too far from us, and hear Dick Birmingham speak. And man, I mean, I still have the legal pad from that very first, you know, almost 30 years now, the very first clinic I attended with him. And he was just a coaching master. But one thing he said, and, you know, I still remember this, is he was on the backside of his, he maybe had actually even retired at that time. He was on the backside of his coaching career, and he looked out at everybody, and he said, "I envy you young guys." He said, I wish, the time goes by so fast. I wish I was sitting where you are right now, and instead of on the other side of this. So the main piece of advice, you know, is basically the same thing, man. You got to enjoy the ride, because you're going to blink, and it's going to be, you know, you're 28 years into it, mm-hmm. and you're eligible to retire like I am. So The main thing is just enjoy the journey, because, you know, just like he said, it's going to go fast. You're going to, like I said, blink, and you're going to be talking about retire. I still can't believe that I'm actually talking about being old enough to retire. And the second thing, I guess, is, and I can speak to that being a small school, is just to make big time where you are. I mean, you know, don't think your program is not being a big time program. If it's not big time, make it into big time. Because I guarantee you, this little small town that we're in, baseball is a big deal. It's a big deal around here, and it's not anything necessarily that I've done. We've just had players that have embraced it. Some good players that have come along and kind of embraced the system, and we've turned it in. You know, we've turned into a big time deal here. You know, the jobs. The larger school jobs, the big time jobs, they'll come calling. But you make big time wherever you are. Those are two big pieces of advice I would give somebody.
Oh, fantastic advice. And, you know, on the flip side of that, we're thinking back first, but now let's look to the current moment. What's something that you've learned lately that's gotten you really excited?
I guess the whole idea of variability training. It's kind of new to me in random practice as opposed to block practice. I've really kind of embraced that and started trying to research that in the last few years, or sticky coaching, how that when we tend to, you know, as an example, I mean, you can cram for an exam and do pretty good that day. Then a couple of days later, you're going to forget all that. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be sticky to you. So just the research I've done and trying to figure out how I can be a better coach and get better long-term results. Well, I mean, all the research, modern research is saying that if there's some struggle there, then you're going to have better, it's going to be your results on the short term are not going to be as good, but long term, you're going to have more growth. That's something that we've embraced the last few years, and I've tried to do a better job of learning the ins and outs of. the problem with that, or the flip side of that, is you've got to be able to kind of monitor, because the challenge can sometimes with high school kids can be too great. I mean, I can put the machine on 98 and say, hey, we're finna grow today, and nobody gets one out of the cage. So you got to kind of monitor and see, try to find that balance of, this is challenging, we're going to struggle a little bit, you guys have got to embrace the struggle, and just trust me, this is going to make us better in the long run. So that is, I'm excited about that, and I think it's made me a better coach in the last years, certainly was in the one I first started, and even in before I learned that.
Oh, fantastic. And again, on the resource question, most of our listeners are listening to this going, man, you've had a lot of different influences in your career. And if you had to boil down just a couple of resources for us to dig into, either recently or things that have changed your coaching career, where can we look to get some advice from that?
Well, one thing, I don't know if the young guys are even aware of this, but we had the legendary, I guess it's Ron Polk's baseball. That's what I had to coach in baseball class in college when I was at UCA, and that was our textbook. And little did I know how valuable that thing was. I've actually owned my second copy of that. And if the young guys haven't heard of that, I mean, it is a Bible of how to coach baseball. It is an unbelievable resource that I've used many times. I say that I'm on my second copy. I got a chance to be a Major League Baseball envoy one summer in England. And I actually left my original copy, the one I got in class time, with one of the coaches in Plymouth, England. So I had to buy another one when I came home. But I bought the digital version not too long ago. But that's a super resource. A lot of people, the younger guys, I'm not sure if they heard of the Driveline. Information that Driveline's putting out now is fantastic with the research. It's really kind of can make you question some of the long held beliefs we've had as coaches on how things really should work. I think that's a really tremendous resource. We love base running, and the steelbases.com website and the information that they have put out is tremendous. All of that. I mean, we use the lesson plans that he puts out, and that's been a big deal for us as far as our success with our base running. The ABCA is tremendous, and it's taken off by leaps and bounds the last few years. That to me is maybe my favorite resource of all, with the chats they have on Monday nights and just the ABCA clinic. And I heard one of them say not too long ago, when you talked about the ABCA before, it meant the clinic. You were going to the clinic. And it's become so much more. Those guys are doing such a great job with the videos that you get when you go to the National Clinic, the access to the videos, and now the Barnstormers Tour and the calls from the clubhouse. And that's, I guess, the last thing is I've spent a whole lot of lunch duties listening to your podcast, and I've enjoyed those. And then the ABCA, the calls from the clubhouse. And I've really, even for an old guy, the some of the new stuff with the podcast, and it's there's some really good information out there.
Fantastic. And I think probably my favorite question that I want you to really leave us with is, and again, you've given us a tremendous amount of actionable and practical things that we can take to practice tomorrow, which I really do appreciate. But say we went to practice tomorrow and you wanted to give us something that your kids and our kids will absolutely love. And again, you've shared a ton of different things for us to be able to do that. But if you showed up to practice tomorrow and you said, hey guys, we're doing this today, and they would just get extremely excited, what would one or a few of those things be?
You know, one thing, we haven't done this very much, but because we just heard about it. You know, you had Matt Kuzdirk on a few weeks ago, and either he mentioned on your podcast, I know he had it on Twitter, was the short game that he played. We did that, and it was a huge hit. I mean, it was so much fun. We enjoyed that. And like I said, we just found out about that earlier this year. But it's a great way to end practice on a fun note. I really enjoyed that. One thing our kids, and I've had a couple tell me, one of the things that our kids like a whole lot here is what we call validation BP. The bunch that I have right now, I mean, they eat validation BP up. They love it. And the way it works is that it's another point-based competition, but if you, it's really pretty simple. During BP, if you get a hit, let's say that we're in a group together with two other guys, maybe there's a group of four, you get five cuts. Every time you get a hit, you get a point if you can validate it with by getting your bunt down.
Okay.
So, and it can be, you can just do sack bunts, you can call out the bunts, say this one's going to be, after they get the hit, say safety squeeze or drag bunt or whatever. They only get the point if they get the bunt down. They validate it with the point. And if the ball reaches the wall, then it ends up being double points. So they can actually, if they hit a ball that clears the left field wall, that bunt then becomes a two-point bunt. So you get a little, you know, it's fun. The defense is playing hard, because especially the outfielders, because they're trying to keep the ball off the metal wall at our place, mm-hmm. because they know that that guy's about to score if he gets his bunt down. There's a lot of effort on defense, and guys are trying to, you know, on the infield are trying to get balls from going through for hits. So it's good defensively, and it also puts a little pressure on that guy now, instead of just saying, hey, two bunts and then five cuts. And he's got, now he has a little pressure on the bunt, which is more game-like. Mm-hmm. So you only get the points if you validate them. And then you'll hear some guy will hit a, you know, he'll smash one to center and hit a home run and then foul his bunt off. And everybody on the team will groan and laugh at him. And, you know, so they, that's a BP that is pretty fun. We enjoy that a lot. Our guys enjoy that. And I tell you, one of the things that our guys enjoy a lot are on Sunday nights at 8 is we'll turn the lights on and we'll have during the season, because we play conference games on Monday. Mm-hmm. So we don't practice on Sunday, but we have voluntary BP under the lights on Sunday nights at 8. And that's in asking some of our guys what they enjoy the most, or what did you enjoy the most when you played? And he goes, you know what? I love hanging out with everybody. Just the camaraderie and being able to hit under the lights and having a good time taking BP on Sunday night. It usually takes about an hour. We go from 8 and 9, and we make it totally, because it's Sunday, you know, and it's after church. We make it totally voluntary. So, and I'll show up. I don't even make the other coaches show up. I'll show up and I'll throw usually for about an hour, BP for about an hour. And our guys really enjoy that. So those are some of the things I really would hope that when, if you were to get a panel of our guys in through the years and you were to ask them, there would be a whole lot of answers of varied, you know, things, different things that we have done, because we try to make, for the most part, I mean, I want a lot of the stuff we do, I want kids to love it and enjoy it.
Sure. And you can definitely tell by the sound of your voice and just you talking about it, that that's something that you're very intentional about. And so I'm sure that that is definitely the case. But if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you about, man, it's, I'll be honest, a ton of practical things. You really did. You opened up, you know, a ton of stuff for us. But if they want to get in touch with you to ask you about any or all of these things, what would be the best way to do so?
Email or Twitter, probably. Send me a message, either one. Email address is Lance Spigner, no spaces, just LanceSpigner @gmail.com. And then I'm on Twitter at Spigner23, @Spigner23.
Perfect. And I will link those down in the show notes as well for the listeners. And Coach, you brought it today, and I really appreciate all the things that you shared with us. And, you know, I just want to open up the mic for you. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
I'm thankful for the opportunity, Jonathan. I enjoyed it. I guess the only thing I would say, you know, we've already gotten the enjoy it. It's going to go really fast out of the way. And that's been on my mind a lot with me about to retire this coming. I'm filing for retirement doing that May 31st. But I just think, you know, the main thing to me is to have a system. It's just set your program up systematically to where, I mean, you measure things. You don't take things for granted, you know, and you just have some kind of systematic process for evaluating. Are you playing good? Are we meeting our goals? That kind of thing. We have used some of the one pitch warrior stuff with the TPI, team process index. Mm-hmm. So when we, you know, I think you can probably Google that and find that, but, or how to get hooked up with that. But when we meet after a game, it takes a lot of the emotion out, and we say there are basically four things that can happen. We're going to play well and win. We can play well and lose. Not a whole lot we can do about that. We're going to play well. We're going to play well and win. We're going to play well and lose, and sometimes we're not going to play well and win. And then sometimes we're just going to play bad and we're going to lose. So our numbers and our systematic process kind of tells us which one of those things that we have done. And it, you know, it kind of, after the game, there's sometimes a lot of raw emotion coaching, as everybody knows. And this kind of takes you away from that a little bit, where you can either that night or the next day, you know, you have a way to evaluate what you've done and what you've not done very well and what we need to work on. So I think one, you know, big secret to success that we've had here is just kind of having a system and something that measures. So, and then we'll take our season and break it down into 9-game sets or trimesters, we call it. And after 9 games, we'll evaluate our numbers, and I will, you know, work off those numbers and see what needs more attention or what are we not very good at. Maybe our quality at bat percentage is pretty low or something like that. So I think that's a big deal.
Thank you for listening to Ahead of the Curve. You can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform, which can include Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, or YouTube. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it on social media to help get the word out. Once again, thank you for joining us.